we should talk a little bit more about Gene Reinbold, who recently passed.
Yes.
And would he be considered a mentor to you? And kind of talk about what a person he was.
Well, Gene Reinbold, I am nowhere near. I could not touch his hem of being a true entrepreneur. But Gene and I had a very close relationship, especially here in these latter years, because we both began to talk about the influences that we had in our lives. Gene was raised by his mom. His parents never divorced, but they separated during the Depression years. He was born in the late 1920s. He grew, matter of fact, the house he was born in on Pickard Street in Norman still stands. And he had several brothers and sisters. An importance of education was there because OU is literally just a handful of blocks away. He goes to OU. He's in an ROTC program. The Korean War is going on. He goes to Korea. He comes home. He decides to get an MBA. Then he's going to be, and of course the Reinbold family, I'm glad they'll not hear this, he was invited to get his PhD at the University of Texas. Mm. But he was also offered a job to teach economics at Washington and Lee over in Virginia. And he was going back and forth on what to do educationally when he got a phone call from a friend of his that he had known in the Army in Korea. And he said, H.E., I'm still in the military. And he said, the base exchange at Okinawa is out of control. And he said, I want you to come to Okinawa and run the base exchange here. He said, I can't. Gene always told the story and smiled. He said, I can't give you the one star, but I can give you the pay of a one-star general. And H.E. said, I'm going to Okinawa. And so he went there for a couple of years, got that under control, came home, and then got into banking business. And yes, he was my mentor, and he was my friend, and I loved him dearly.
Yeah, and we have his interview on Voices of Oklahoma. We could talk a lot about the banking business, but we also want to talk about, since you're a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, you've served them in a financial way as well. Why don't you talk about, as the nation's Secretary of Treasury, Chairman of the nation's 1999 Constitution Convention, and been really involved in many capacities of the nation. Talk to us about some of that.
Well, once again, I had never set out to be a tribal official. But we had an era of consternation in our tribe during the 1990s. We had a principal chief, and I'm known for naming names. I'll just say it outright. Chief Joe Bird, who I had actually gone to college with. I knew Joe. He was from like Short or Nycutt down in Sequoia County. And he had a very contentious principal chief era. There was some allegations of election issues. The tribunal of the Cherokee Nation, which was our only judiciary, sent the marshals to get some evidence of a potential case against the chief. And our constitution in the 1990s had been actually written in 1975. We've had four written constitutions since 1827. So 1827, 1839, and then 1975, ultimately 1999, which I'll speak to. But during the Byrd era, he fired all the marshals because they were not protected by the Constitution. He impeached the three men tribal tribunal, which was both a court of origination and appeal. In other words, it was like he went in and fired all the judges of the Cherokee Nation. It's very hard to be prosecuted by a court when you have the power to dismiss them. Out of that, it just so happened that the planets aligned, because here we have this political upheaval going, but the framers of the 1975 Constitution were brilliant. Chief Ross Swimmer, who of course was the man who sort of introduced Wilma Mankiller to her pathway toward principal chief, was ostensibly the writer of the 75 Constitution. And he realized that he could not see over, and this is a classic Jay Hanna line, he could not see over the curvature of time. and he knew that Indian country was in evolution. We'd only had the ability to re-elect our own principal chief since 1970. We'd only had the ability to, many tribes to reform their governments from the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, or the Oklahoma Indian Welfare Act 1936. Federal government in the 1830s didn't have any problem with rounding up Indians and the Indian Removal Act, but by the 1930s, 100 years later, it's like, well, we're really feeling bad about this, so we'll let these tribes, put their governments back together. In that 75 Constitution, the final article said that 20 years hence, the Cherokee people will be asked if they would like a new constitution, an amendment, or whatever. And sure enough, that question went on the election ballot of 1995. And the Cherokee citizens, because of this political upheaval, they said, oh yes, we need to look at our constitution. The Oklahoma Indian Indian Child Welfare Act had been passed in 1978. We now had marshals that could arrest you. The Indian country was in evolution toward a much more perfect sovereignty of running their own government. So I received a phone call one day from Troy Wayne Poteet, who was on the Jalagi Denelawigi on the tribal council. And he said, Jay, we're putting together a constitutional convention commission. And he said, the tribal council seems to think that you are honest, and we would like for you to be on that commission. And we spent months researching historical constitutions, talking with constitutional scholars. I suggested that we actually go into tribal communities, not just in the Cherokee Nation, but we Cherokees are, we're kind of all over the place. A lot of Cherokees in California, a lot of Cherokees in Texas and New Mexico. We held 21 public meetings and took down every word through court reporter transcripts of what citizens said we want to see in the Constitution. The commission determined by December of 1998 that we would have to have a real constitutional convention. We met weekly. Every weekend I drove to Tahlequah, and we put together the mechanics of a convention, and we selected 74 delegates, which I'll not bore you with the delegate selection, but it was very well tranched. We had so many members from the judiciary, so many members from the tribal council, so many members from the executive branch. We had people that we drew at lot. You could, if you were a Cherokee citizen, you just go, yeah, I'd be a delegate. And I rolled up this sleeve and reached into a basket and pulled out names, and they were going to be delegates to the convention. The day that they were gaveled in, I'm sitting in the back. I'm thinking, man, this is great. My work's done here. We've put all this together. And the very first motion made on the floor, we had proposed that there would be a titular chairman. It was going to be Charlie Gord, Dr. Charlie Gord, who was of the Rattling Gords. He had a PhD and had worked in the tribe, and I thought, well, be the chairman, Charlie. The first motion was made to elect a chairman. And, of course, Charlie, and you can read those transcripts, because I had suggested that we get a court reporter to take down every word at the convention, because I'm always tired of attorneys saying, we have no idea what the framers meant when they wrote these. Well, how about we just see the transcripts of the framers? So we had a lady there who's Cherokee from Stillwell, and she's taking down the transcripts. And two people were nominated to be the chair of the Constitutional Convention, Mr. Gord and Mr. Hanna. So I thought, well, maybe I won't be elected to this. So we went to the front, and I introduced myself in Cherokee, and John, I love this. We told about who our families were, and I said, I am the grandson, because remember, it's matriarchal, so your Cherokee grandmother tells everybody who you are. I said, I'm the grandson of Gataya Starr, and I heard a delegate on the front row. She leaned over and she said, Treaty Party, which was the political group that actually signed the treaties to remove the Cherokees, where Cherokees died and many of them were assassinated. My family was a target of assassination during the 1840s. And I turned my head thinking, you would have thought that we had gotten over that by now. We had also planned for the convention to be a three-day event. It was 9 days, and it ran for 10, 12, one day, 14 hours, and I gaveled through the entire convention. And at the end of it, we had a new constitution. It was ratified by the Cherokee people, and it is the law of the land today. But because of that convention thing, and I thought, well, okay, my service to the Cherokee Nation is over. I'll go back to just being a banker. But then I received a phone call from Chief Chadwick Corntassel Smith, and he said, Mr. Hanna, he said, Tribal Council, they trust you because what you did in the Constitutional Convention. And I said, and he said, and they're going to have a vote of no confidence on the treasurer of the Cherokee Nation this evening at 6:30. And he said, I really can't afford for them to do that. So he's going to resign at 5:30. And I want you to agree to be appointed as Secretary Treasurer at 6:30. I said, well, Chad, I already have like a real daytime job. And he said, not a problem. You only have to do this for 90 days, and then I'll find someone in the tribe that the tribal council will accept. John, I served 4 years of a 90-day appointment. And during that period of time, I restructured our budgets, I restructured our audits, and was finally able to slap my hands together like a casino teller and tell him that all this money is accounted for, just as my great-great-grandfather Ezekiel Eugene Starr had done in the 1890s. And I said, gaggone, in Cherokee, it means I'm going.
So you took a leave of absence from Bank First.
Actually, I have to credit David Rainbolt, because when I told him that I was going to be the Secretary Treasurer, if he would allow it, and he said, this is important, not just for you personally, but he said, this is important for the Cherokee people, it's important for the state of Oklahoma, and I expect for you to do both jobs. So 1 year, I drove 13,000 miles between Norman and Tahlequah and Catoosa, and I didn't take any pay. I want that to be on the official record. I told the chief, I said, if I take money from you for being the treasurer, you might start telling me what to do, and I might feel obligated to do it, and I will work for the people of this nation. And I exhausted all of my personal leave and all my vacation time, and I worked on weekends, and I did both jobs.